Hi guys, today Paul Perez from the Improve and Have Fun podcast and I will discuss the Cecil Hotel and all the craziness that's gone on there in nearly 100 years. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Reseller Niche Podcast, a show for e-commerce buyers and sellers where we investigate unique items being bought and sold and show you how research equals knowledge equals profit.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to another episode of the Reseller Niche Podcast. I'm here with my main man, Paul. How is it going, Paul?
Where are we here? You're on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast, and the sun is setting now, 8 o'clock, which is wonderful. It means like summer is right around the corner, even though it's been super cool as of late. It hasn't been really warm, but it's a Wednesday. It's a hump day, and we're recording on a special episode for a creepy topic.
Super creepy topic, I must say. Did you want to let everyone know kind of what the topic is for today and kind of go into that just a little bit?
Of course. Mo, you and I are going to be discussing the Cecil Hotel tonight. And, you know, all the topics that I've asked you to kind of, you know, talk about with me, Mo, like I a lot of times had seen the stuff in advance. And I was just like, I want to talk about this. And, you know, thankfully you came along and, you know, we could talk about this. But this is the first topic that I've asked to watch with you that I have not ever, I didn't know anything. I went into this fresh as well. Like I did not know anything about this. So come to find out, you know, we're going to be discussing the Cecil Hotel. It's a famous hotel in Los Angeles where there's been a lot of bad stuff that's happened there. And that's what we're going to be discussing this evening. Definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what, it's funny, when you first sent me the link for this, I thought about American Horror Story. And then after listening to the podcast and watching the Netflix documentary, they actually mentioned that was based off this hotel. So if anyone wants to kind of know what we're talking about here, American Horror Story, I don't know what series, but it's called, I believe it's called The Hotel.
Yeah, it's American Horror Story Hotel. And actually, I would say American Horror Story was influenced two separate ways and two separate times by the Cecil Hotel. First, the season that we reviewed, 1984, it actually The Richard Ramirez type character who was like, Hail Satan and this and that, right? And then also now Hotel, the whole season of Hotel is based on this hotel. You know what I mean? We're going to go into, like, I mean, it's common knowledge, but for the folks who don't know, you know, we're going to go ahead and get into that in this episode. The reason why it was influenced by the Cecil Hotel.
Absolutely. And the Cecil Hotel, like Paul mentioned, is a hotel. I believe they said it was built or opened in 1924 and originally was supposed to be some really ritzy kind of hotel. It was huge. It still is a pretty big hotel. I believe they said 700 rooms or 700 plus rooms, something like that.
That's and right. Mo.
Originally, it was supposed to be like for the, like it was close to the train station or the, so it had a lot of foot traffic, which is great. You know, you're talking about not many cars back then. 1924. And then within, I'm guessing, 6 to 7 years, you had the crash. Was it 29? I think it was the crash.
That's right. The Great Depression. That's right.
So you've got 10 years or so of really the toughest times this country's ever seen. So that hotel, the Cecil Hotel, it remained just barely held on, but they had to kind of change up the way they weren't this ritzy, they weren't the Ritz anymore. It basically turned from the five-star hotel to a half-star hotel. They had a lot of people that were tenants for life sometimes. I mean, literally, they would live there for the entirety of their lives simply because the Cecil Hotel would do anything for money at that point. I mean, every business, I'd say, you know, Great Depression, a lot of businesses went under. So they were able to survive. And that around, I guess, the Great Depression is when some of the, what was the first, I guess, I don't know if it was a suicide or first occurrence of a major issue that went on at the hotel. Did they mention that or?
You hear that echo? Check.
I don't hear it.
I can hear it on my end, but
all right, no, I'm going to refresh. You go ahead.
No, actually, wait. I don't hear it now.
Okay. All right. You go ahead.
Okay, that's just strange. But okay, to answer your question, Mo, yes. The first time someone has actually somebody committed suicide in the hotel. I'm reading an hour off of Wikipedia. I'll read it to you. It's the first documented suicide at the Cecil Hotel occurred on the evening of January the 22nd, 1927, when Percy Ormond Cook, 52, shot himself in the head while inside his room after failing to reconcile with his wife and child. Now, I wanted just to add on to this. Working in New York City hotels for the last close to 20 plus years myself, people killing themselves or murders or, it's not a regular occurrence, but every hotel has it. You know, every hotel has a story or has something that's happened there where, like I said, it's been a suicide, somebody's killed themselves or somebody, not murdered. Murder is a little bit more extreme, but murder does happen too. You know what I'm saying? But I just wanted to add that. Like, so suicide murder is not unique to the Cecil. I'm just saying it's like any hotel that's been around for a really long time, like the Cecil has, it's a common occurrence. But I'm sorry, Mo, continue.
No, absolutely. And then in 1927, you're talking about, this is right around the time where the economy is about to make a downward turn. But I mean, you're talking about a hotel, especially from 1930 onwards, that had residents, I mean, life residents. So this is their home. It wasn't just a hotel. These are tenants that were there for life longer than a lot of the employees were there. So you're talking about 34. I think they mentioned 50 people there being there for 50 years.
Yeah, I mean, the hotel's almost 100. The hotel's almost like 100 years old. You know, I mean, or close to it. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, there's been residents. Like, part of the hotel is residential. Part of it, over time, they've made it into more of a hotel and even renamed it as well, definitely. But, you know, the question I've been dying to ask you, Mo, you being a West Coast resident, like, have you ever been down there, or have you ever been through Skid Row, or have you ever seen the Cecil yourself?
Like, I've seen Skid Row. Yeah. I've driven through Skid Row. I've been to L.A., you know, dozens of times. I'm not that, to be honest, I wasn't familiar with the term Cecil Hotel. I maybe heard about bits and pieces. I kind of heard of someone we're going to talk about, Lisa Lam. I hadn't heard of that story either, to be honest.
Me neither.
So, I mean, maybe I should have, because I mean, this is not far, like 400 or 500 miles from me, but I hadn't. But it was weird though, because when they played those newscasts, I remember the newscasters. Like, they had in the documentary, they had newscasters. I remember the faces of some of the ladies that were the newscasters there. So, yeah, no, I did not, unfortunately, know about the Cecil, but I've heard of Skid Row. And anyone that's familiar with LA knows that it's a really impoverished area. And I think they showed a poster of the wall. I don't know if it was a poster or it was painted on the wall. It said population too many or something like that.
Wow.
And it was
You did see that in the when they were like kind of B-roll on the documentary. You did see that, definitely. That poster you just said about this, it's saying too many. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Skid Row. I mean, yeah, obviously, like, you know, I think there's an 80s band called Skid Row too. So, I mean, that's where that's all from. It's a big, I believe it's a 50 block area. So it's not small. And that's a tough place to live. So no, I hadn't heard of it, but I wasn't surprised by it. As sad as that is, I wasn't surprised, because I've been to, especially when I was younger, when we were looking for hotels, we would drive down to LA quite a bit. Like, I mean, it wasn't unlike my friends to, you know, go to a hotel, find out it's too expensive and spend the night in our cars or vans or something like that. So the Cecil Hotel, to be honest, if it wasn't like someone running around with a gun or something like that, we probably would have stayed there. That's kind of how we did things back then.
You're saying that. Well, I'm still hearing that back there. I'm just saying that the recording may come out like not sounding so good.
Let me refresh real fast.
Or maybe you have headphones. You have headphones that could help too.
Not in this room, actually.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. But I mean, that's what happened with Elisa Lam. She was first time in America, doesn't have a lot of money, and she came to stay in a hostel kind of style hotel. I mean, her room that she initially had bunk beds, and she was staying with other people. So it just kind of to give you the brain, like the mind of like, this is kind of like a hostel. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah,
but I mean, just piggybacking on your point, that it would have been a place you said you would have stayed with friends.
Absolutely. And I've stayed at hostels before. And then, so it's not unlike something I would have done. I've done, you know, stayed at hostels in San Francisco, which were terrible. To be honest, wow. We didn't sleep.
Yeah.
It was just bad. I'm just going to click refresh real fast.
Go for it. Yeah. So here talking, back to the camera, put the camera down a little bit more. The Cecil Hotel. Now, what Mo and I listened to, what Mo and I researched in, you know, kind of doing this, we watched the Netflix documentary, on the Cecil Hotel. And it's funny because Netflix suggested to me, like, they have a documentary on the Night Stalker on Richard Ramirez, which I was like, this might be, an interesting thing to check out later, definitely. But and we also listened to Chris Jericho's podcast where he interviewed a gentleman. Oh, I hear that echo again. There, good, yeah. Okay, he interviewed gentlemen from Ghost Adventures. That's on Discovery Plus, where they go into haunted places and, you know, they take special equipment and special cameras to see if they pick up anything. And that was, to me, honestly, the documentary was good, but it was a little repetitive because it was just kind of like, how many times can we talk about, like, and then everybody's just like, you should do this, you should do that, like, you know, yeah. Everybody like chiming in with their opinion. So the documentary was good, but it was repetitive. I think it could have been done in two episodes, I think, to tell you the truth. Yeah. Not for, but the podcast really intrigued me because I've been wanting to talk so much about, we go into conspiracy theories, but I definitely want to talk about with you, Mo, about more paranormal stuff. And I definitely feel like after watching the documentary and listening to the podcast, I'm more leaning on the side of the podcast where it was something paranormal that led to this young woman's death. I really feel that because if you look at the history of the Cecil Hotel, how many suicides, and there were two separate occasions, which we mentioned, which is well known, with Richard Ramirez staying in the hotel. There was another occasion where a copycat, someone inspired by Richard Ramirez, stayed there in the 90s, and he killed a bunch of prostitutes. So. Yeah. This hotel has a history of this negative energy where there's been suicides and murders and serial killers staying there. So, I definitely think. And when we heard the podcast, about the paranormal, about the supernatural, when these gentlemen, Zach Bagans is one of them, and you know they've been doing this paranormal kind of research, this paranormal detective work. For many, many years. It's not a thing where they just kind of knew and they just did it to be on TV. Like they've been doing this for a while. And they said that they took them. And there was one situation where they described they took a couple of different psychics and mediums. And they didn't tell them anything. They didn't tell them where this particular room was or what happened in this room. They just kind of like walked them over there. And they said that they felt something. And there was this one occasion when a female like kind of medium said that she felt something like kind of grabbing her like around her private parts and you know, when they took this particular like special camera, they saw something that resembled like some kind of a spirit. Like you think of The Conjuring and you see like this kind of like ghostly figure in the background, right? Similar to that, but not exactly like that, but something similar to that. But Mo, what do you think about all this stuff I just finished blabbing about?
Well, I kind of, talking about the documentary, that I kind of felt the same way in terms of they kind of stretched it a little bit. They tried to. The Lisa Lam story, my wife, I remember talking to her about this. She had actually heard of it when it happened. And she said she remembered. And then I won't say what happened to her yet, but she knew, oh, yeah, this is what's going to happen. You know, have you heard about this? You remember this? This is what's going to happen to her. They're going to talk about that. That's why I was surprised that it was said one of four. So anyways, yeah, it was nicely shot. I guess we should talk about, maybe we'll talk about Lisa Lam because they focused on that in the documentary a lot.
She was the main focus.
Which, to be honest, she should have been a main focus, but not the main focus, if that makes any sense. Because in my eyes, they kind of glazed over Richard Ramirez, maybe because we've all heard of him. He's been in the news a lot lately anyway. But, I kind of wish because they talked a little bit about him. They mentioned how he came in, literally felt like he was able to walk in there completely covered in blood, the way he describes it is he went into the back alley after committing who knows what, murders, who knows what. And then he would strip off all his clothes, be completely bloody, and then walk back through the lobby.
I didn't. You picked up the lobby. I thought he went through the stairs, but I could be wrong.
Maybe the stairs. But the way they made it sound is like he walked through. And even if it's the stairs, the lobby, the fact, I mean, this isn't 1884. This is probably 1985, I'm guessing. They had
this is the 80s.
Cameras. And one thing, they knew that maybe they didn't know who he was, but they knew these murders were going on because they went on for a while. And it was supposedly the biggest thing in LA. Like, this guy was terrorizing the city of Los Angeles for years. So the fact that
he was able to walk through the lobby and like even like have some kind of blood or even walk through the lobby with, in his underwear wasn't a big deal. But I would say to you, I would propose to you, Mo, like, you know, they interviewed that other gentleman. It was an African-American gentleman who was talking about that he lived there. And yes. He was saying how, you know, he stayed up to the sixth floor, and the building has 15 floors. He stayed on the sixth floor. That he wouldn't go up to those other floors because people were getting killed up there. Mm-hmm. People were getting robbed. People were getting killed. So I'm thinking, when I'm hearing hotel talk, like I worked at the front desk for many, many years, and I saw a lot of crazy stuff too. Like if you're working in a place where you're always seeing crazy stuff going on, or you're seeing like prostitutes coming and going, you're seeing like junkies, and you're seeing all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. Up and down the elevators, like I don't think you would bat an eye too much, like if somebody not covered in blood, but like if they just had like they just look weird, or they walk in the lobby in their underwear, you know what I'm saying?
That's true, because I did have an uncle or family friend who ran a hotel in kind of a pretty bad part of London, and it was on like a main street, so people would you'd see him. I remember we would go there quite a bit, especially on the weekends, and even if it wasn't that late, you'd see someone drunk, someone holding them up, something like that, because this is not the best neighborhood, best area. And we'd be in the office area behind glass and everything, but you could see that. So I could see what you're saying there. Kind of get desensitized in a sense, especially if that's your job, you know, 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. Maybe you have the night shifts. Maybe, I mean, who knows? You've seen 1,000 of these people. So I get how you like, well, yeah, there was a guy. Yeah, I looked at kind of out of it.
I agree with you. Like, if it was like in a nicer kind of place, then I 100% agree with you. Like this guy looks out of sorts. You know what I'm saying? But it's funny. I will tell you, and this is from living in the ghetto all my life. I still live in the ghetto to some extent. Any place that you go to that has a glass in between you and the customers, you're in the ghetto. If it's a hotel, if it's a chickens, if it's a fried chicken spot and there's a glass between you and the customers, 100% you're in the ghetto, dude. 100%. I'm sorry, we'll continue. Keep talking.
It's funny you said that, because I just thought of when I used to go to school, and we would there's a city called East Palo Alto, and there was a McDonald's there at the corner there, and we went there. I want to say it wasn't even that late. It was like 9 or 10 at night, but it was dark. So we just ordered like your Big Macs or whatever. And I remember it looked like it was a bank. They had like an inch of glass. Like, what did you want? Okay, you want a Big Mac? And they pushed it through.
Oh, dude, yeah, you are totally in the ghetto.
I mean, anyone knows where East Palo Alto, EPA, murder capital of the world, I think, in the mid-90s. So, I mean, or it's up there. So.
No, dude, like, I don't live far away from Newark. And it's better now, but Newark at one point was like one of the most dangerous cities like in the country too. So yeah, dude, I smell what you're cooking there, Mo.
Definitely. Yeah, we were laughing our heads off, like, oh man, they think we're gonna rob them. It's like, no, they don't care about us. They care about the guy behind us. But whatever.
Exactly, dude. But you know what it made me think too, Mo? Like, we're talking about like kind of hotel and logistics. Like, you know, if you knew the whole, if you, like a few things. I'm jumping around. I'm sorry, Mo.
No worries.
First of all, the hotel's closed right now, but they're renovating it, and they're planning to open it up in October 21, you know, October of this year. And dude, you couldn't pay me money to stay in that place. You could not pay me money to stay in that place, honestly. You know what I mean? Because like just the bad energy in that place.
Yeah.
Like, and I during this pandemic, one of the many crazy activities, hobbies that I picked up is, you know, and it's always had a passing interest in the back of my mind, but now more so. And this is the reason why I like to discuss these things with you, you know, like UFOs, conspiracies, and also ghost stories. And I would like to visit some of these places, not stay. Or like what we listen to in the podcast, the Ghost Adventures podcast, they stay in these places overnight in the basement, in the 10 hour. I'm like, come on, dude. Yeah, they stay in these places. You know what I'm saying? So you couldn't pay me to stay there. You couldn't pay me to work there. Because like if you're working there all the time, like you're also kind of like dealing with whatever energies at the hotel. You know what I'm saying? So you couldn't pay me to stay there or work there. And the thing is, like, this is my final point, and I want you to chime in, Mo. What about the employees who work there that have to go home at night and they got to go through Skid Row to go home? I'm like, damn, dude. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like you're working in a really bad place, part of town too.
It's demoralizing. I mean, I feel really sorry for them because I'm sure there's a reason why they're working there. Like they said, there's a reason why there are people staying at this place, especially because, you know, long-term, they can stay there long-term without a deposit, they said. And it could be someone that didn't have, you know, records or who knows what. They didn't have what was needed to get a regular apartment, I guess. So, I mean, there's reasons why people work there and live there. So I get that. I mean, on a side note, like I said, I have stayed at maybe not at a place this bad, like a zero star place, but I've stayed at plenty of one star places in my life. And it was to the point where me and my buddies, we knew we weren't going to sleep. It was that one guy, I remember he would bring a sleeping bag, not to sleep in. It was so he could stand on it or so he can sit on it because he didn't want to sit on the bed. He didn't want to, you know, this place, we're not going to be able to sleep or sit here. So he would bring that thing. It was in a bag and he would just lay it on the ground. That's where he would like stand or sit. If he wanted to lay down, he would lay down on top of the plastic bag on top of the sleeping bag. But anyway, so there's reasons why people my long winded way of saying this is reasons.
Yes.
But getting back away from the grossness and the bed bugs and everything. Why don't we talk a little bit about what they talked about in the documentary, the most Elisa Lam. Because I guess one thing I would say is she kind of personified the reason why this place is so, especially in recent times, so bad. The reputation, and it's ironic because this happened, I believe, in 2013. So it wasn't like, you know, in the 70s, you think like, no, it was a relatively good time. I mean, I guess the economy was so-so, but still, it is Skid Row. So we've got a young girl. She was 21 years old. She was from Vancouver, Canada. Her whole thing was she used Tumblr a lot to blog or vlog. And then she would, she wanted to travel. Her whole thing is she wanted to see the world. She kind of described how she wanted to do this and do that. And she was by herself, like she traveled alone. And I believe her itinerary had her hitting 4 spots in California. And this was the second one on the list. So I guess she was going from the south up. So she went to San Diego already and she was in Los Angeles. She was going to go to, I think, the Bay Area after that. So she hits LA and you would think, like any of us, anyone that doesn't live in LA, you think LA, wow, you know, movie stars, Hollywood Boulevard, whatever. And from the outside, when you look at the Cecil Hotel during the daytime, it doesn't actually look that bad if you look like a picture of it. I looked at a couple pictures and obviously pictures can be deceiving, but if you were to look at it like on a, I don't know, a TripAdvisor and not read the reviews, it might actually not look like a bad hotel. It just looks like an older hotel. And I think she describes walking in, similar to a couple other people, that you walk in, it looks very grandiose.
The lobby.
Yes, the lobby. You got to be specific. The lobby looked very nice, older, but very big, spacious, nice. And that's about where it ends. With it being nice, I would say, other than being big. So, I mean, my question to you is, being someone that's been around like hotels as much as you have, is it typical for like hotels to have this great, great lobby and the rest to be terrible? Or is that kind of out of the ordinary?
Oh, Mo, that's great that you asked that question, because I do have a story about that. Like, I've worked now in about five New York City hotels, and the majority of them being in Times Square or close to Times Square. And the majority of the hotels that I've worked at, they weren't like super old, except one, which I'm going to tell a story about right now. They weren't super old. So them not being super old, and also if it was a bigger company like a Marriott and a Hilton, which I've worked for both, I'm still like currently employed by Marriott, you know, hopefully go back to work soon. like they're better about keeping up their rooms and like, you know, showing new innovations like inside the room, or like a clock radio that, you know, connect with your iPod and your phone. And, you know, they're better about these kind of things. You know what I'm saying? But then there's also like franchise hotels. So sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. But what I'm ultimately trying to say, I worked at this one hotel called the Edison Hotel, really, really big hotel. And that's right off of Times Square, definitely. Okay. And that hotel has been around for over 100 years. And that hotel, like when I saw like this whole thing with the with this documentary and the Cecil Hotel, that hotel was very similar in which the lobby was amazing. It was like an art deco. They even filmed The Godfather in part of the lobby. Like, you know, the hotel has a lot of history. The lobby looks incredible, you know? But when you go upstairs to the rooms and you go upstairs to the floors, not so much. You know what I'm saying? Like, and they were slowly renovating parts of the hotel, like to look like, you know, like a modern day hotel. But there were some rooms where like furniture, and it's not like it was bad in the sense of like it's a half a star or like you know you can't even get on the, you know, the bed, and it's not that bad, but it was like a throwback. Like, and then some of the floors had marble and the marble was broken off and there was like tape covering it. It's just like it's embarrassing. Yeah. Like, you have this amazing lobby, you have people coming from around the world, you know, this is before COVID, all the time. The New York City hotels more often than not were sold out. You know what I'm saying? And this is like people are paying money to stay in these hotels. And it looked like the shits. It looked like a throwback to not the 80s, but to the 90s. And it is like, dude, like you go into one of the rooms and, you know, like in New York City, this is very a familiar thing to me. Like, you know, you see like those old school radiators or a pipe running through. And that's like, what the fuck? You know what I'm saying? Like, and then like, I guess the thing that got me, because I stayed in the hotel as well. Like sometimes I had to do doubles and they let us like stay in the hotel, but just to sleep, to come right back to work. And the bureau's like super, like, you know, when you have a bureau that's handed down, it's like been scratched up a bunch.
Yeah.
Bureau's like that. And I was like, dude, this is embarrassing. You know what I'm saying? So to answer your question in a long winded way, yes, I've worked in a hotel. And that's like the shortest time I've ever worked in a hotel too, because the manager I dealt with was a monster. And that was like a 10-month period and I left. You know what I'm saying? So
gotcha.
The Edison Hotel, beautiful lobby, a lot of history, but incredible bar as well. But some of the rooms,
I mean, that's a perfect segue into not just Elisa Lam. I mean, we actually don't know. I mean, I didn't see what she thought of the hotel. I'm not sure if that was part of it.
No, it wasn't shared. It wasn't shared
what she thought of, which was interesting because she seemed to be an avid blogger. She seemed to talk about life in general. She was bipolar. She was looking to do things. She was having hardships, depression.
She's a young girl. Yeah. A young girl that wanted to possibly get out of Vancouver because that's where she was from and just like see the world. You know, like I think that's a very natural desire that a lot of people have. You know what I'm saying?
And I think if it was a couple of years later, this whole thing would have been, instead of on Tumblr, would have been like on Instagram or Facebook or something. And you would have seen a lot of pictures and videos and that type of thing. But it was just kind of shy of, you know, people being overly video picture crazy. So anyways, so she goes to this hotel. Who knows how long she's going to stay there, but she wants to experience life. And then she's vlogging. It kind of gets a little blurry about what she does then, because even the cops are not quite sure. You know, we know that she originally stayed with, I don't know if it was like she was sharing a room with two other just people, kind of like hostel style, like maybe bunk beds or something. I'm not sure.
That's right. No, you're right. You're right.
And then it seems like they maybe complained about her. They said she had like erratic behavior. I don't know what she was doing, but for whatever reason, they separated her into a separate room. And that's when things really go south for her. She starts to get depressed even more. I believe she visits a bookstore. Did they talk about, I mean, one of the things they said is she goes to buy a book or she goes to a bookstore.
Hi guys, shameless plug section here. We'd love to have you join our reselling group called the Reseller Niche Help Group on Facebook. A lot of great resellers there. Also, if it's possible, if you could leave us a review on Apple or Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, you can find these podcasts in video form on YouTube. We'd love to have you join us there so you can see some of the products we go through and see some of the people we're interviewing. And if you could possibly subscribe That would be the kicker. Thanks so much for listening.
What did she buy?
She went to go buy a book at this place called The Last Bookstore. And in the surveillance video, they show, you know, she buys like a, I think it looks like a heavy book. And it's kind of like delivered to her at the hotel. Or she walks in with the people that have, it's given to her in a box.
Very odd. That she buys
in Slack's bookstore, yeah. But then there's a conspiracy theory where, there's a bunch of conspiracy theories when it comes to Elisa Lam. Like the owners of the bookstore have the same zip code as she does in Vancouver, or like it's just weird little coincidence. I mean, I'm not gonna get into the end of the Elisa Lam. I want you to do that.
I'm gonna skip ahead a little bit to explain what happens to her, and then we're gonna kind of go back because there's so many conspiracy theories, so we kind of have to. So long story short, she basically goes missing. She disappears. And she goes from somebody that's blogging every day online on Tumblr to nothing. And then her parents or her family get freaked out. They haven't heard from her in like 24 hours. Then it was 48 hours. And then the cops are in there. And it turns into a really big deal because like this person came into the hotel. And then what happened? We don't know. So then they have all kinds of like they in the documentary, they're interviewing the actual detectives and they're showing the footage and they keep going back to this footage of her in an elevator. And it seems to be they think and it turns out to be the last footage of her ever. And it's kind of her looking a little bit out of it. Hey, Louis, how's it going? And she's walking in and out of an elevator, pressing the buttons and kind of looking, poking her head out like she's looking at someone or maybe afraid of somebody or maybe nobody really knows. There's all kinds of theories about this. But after that, there's nothing. The trail goes silent. They don't know what happened. All they know is she is not there. I don't know if they mentioned if she had a cell phone or not. I'm assuming that that wasn't there anymore. I don't know if they could track that or not.
That's probably a personal belonging.
Because actually, that's a good point because they had her personal belonging. That's the other thing. In her room, they went through her room. They pretty much had everything. That they had the box that you talked about that was delivered from the last bookstore. And for the last, I mean, two-thirds, actually more than two-thirds of the four-part documentary, it's all about what happened to Lisa Lam, like the disappearance of this girl. What happened to this person? And it kind of takes on a life of its own in a sense that it's like she had a million people. I mean, they had this video footage of the elevator, which they, I guess the cops are kind of out of ideas. They search the entire hotel. They go on the roof. They have dogs go all over the place and nothing. They interview people. They don't have any real hard evidence of any kind at first. And then, so they release footage of that video of the elevator.
To the public.
Yeah, to the public. And it goes viral. And this is, YouTube's around and everything. So I'm sure it's YouTube and other places, but 2013. And it just, 25 million hits, I think they said something like that.
Crazy.
And it's like all over the world. They just got Facebook groups. They interview the guy that starts the Elisa Lam Facebook group or something like that, and all this stuff. All these guys are kind of like armchair detectives trying to figure out what's going there. They're getting, like, the cops are getting inundated. Sorry, go ahead.
No, dude, like, I honestly, that's one of the biggest things I learned in this documentary, that I didn't even know that there was this whole web sleuth community. You know, and like I was like Googling and like looking up these YouTubers who are still to this day like doing true crime videos and they're, you know, very popular and whatnot. So I didn't even know this existed. You know, it's a thing of like web sleuth, but like, and like reporting the true crime, but like trying to do active research on solving crimes, that blows my mind. I was like, I can't believe people actually do this. So I just found that to me, honestly, the Cecil Hotel was like the, you know, but like this little side thing of web sleuth, it's amazing. Like, I didn't even know this was a thing.
Oh yeah. And then it kind of went from something like they're reaching out for help to this is overwhelming because the way they described it is they would get so many maybe not fake suggestions, but like
the LAPD. I'm just piggybacking on your point that the LAPD, it's kind of like, it's weird though. It's kind of like you're reselling, and then I'm messaging you, Mo, you can do Mercari, you can do this, you can do Amazon. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, I got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, thank you. You know? And that would get crazy. Like if me and all your friends that think we know about what you're doing, and I'm not saying it's totally like, it's not valid. Like, you could have some actual good suggestions in there, and within the mix, but like, it's like I'm me and Lone Star Picker, big shout out to you, and everybody who does not resell is coming to you to tell you how to resell.
Exactly. And then not only that, you're under the gun, and it's life, literally you're talking about a life and death situation here. And so these cops go from having leads to not having leads to having too many leads to not having any leads. And so long story short, we'll go basically, I think the third episode of the documentary, they talk about the maintenance guy and talk about the maintenance guy. And then this gets,
I'm not going to say it, but this is where it gets gruesome. Yes. You know what I mean? About how.
There's a couple, an English couple. They're staying on their dream vacation. And unfortunately, it's at the Cecil Hotel. And they interview them in the documentary. And they said that, they knew the hotel was crap. But on like day 3 or 4, it gets worse because the water pressure goes out. And they're using the water for everything, to bathe, to drink, to brush your teeth.
The water is starting to come out discolored as well.
Yes. And it turns brownish. And they said, but we continue to use it. They call down the maintenance. And they interview I think she was a general manager. They keep going back to her as a lady there. And she said, this is a big hotel. We send the maintenance guy to look at it. Then the maintenance guy, in real life, I don't think these two ever got along, the maintenance guy and the general manager, but that's just me. But then, so the maintenance guy, he says, there's just me and another guy. We're the only ones that have the keys to all this stuff. So he goes and he's checking around. He goes to one of the floors, I forget which one, and he turns on the faucet and he said, yeah, they're right. There's no pressure or very little pressure. So then he actually has the foresight to go to the roof. And he goes up and they have these 4 giant tanks. Go ahead.
Yeah, because that's where like the water is, from those water tanks. And actually, I've seen that in my own hotels that I've worked at. I'm talking about modern hotels, the boiler and everything is kind of up there. So it's kind of a system where like the water comes from there and it gets heated up through there. And that's how it kind of like runs through the hotel and stuff. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to add that in more.
No. You're actually exactly right. And I know that it's big in New York hotels, especially. And these tanks are huge. I believe they said they're 10-foot tanks. I don't know how much water is in them, but they're giant.
And also the lids to get like kind of just to even take a peek. The lids themselves are like 20 pounds a door, like just to kind of like.
Yes. And we're talking about at the lid. I don't know if it's 10 feet across, 6 feet across. So big lids, big solid metal lids, no hinges. So it's not like you're lifting a door or something. No, you're lifting a giant circular piece of metal. So anyways, that's what the maintenance guy does. I mean, he would know because he's the maintenance guy. Okay, so he goes up, he climbs up the ladder, he goes in, and he sticks his head in the tank, one of the tanks, and he sees an arm, or what looks like an arm. He doesn't really know, but he assumes, because they've had the cops there for like the last week, that this is who they're looking for. And I believe this is day 19. I'm not sure exactly, but it's something like, it's pretty far. Because the way they described it is that the body, when they found it, was decomposing pretty badly. If you want to double check that for me. But it wasn't like day 2 or 3 or something like that. It was pretty far along the way. And I believe in the first week that they were there, the cops did this whole thing where they went on the roof and they used, I think they called it the night sun or something. Like they were shining their light in and everything. They maybe didn't open the tanks. I don't know. But I wish they had of, because maybe they would have, I don't know. But anyway, so long story short, he finds the Lisa Lam inside one of these tanks, goes down to the manager and says, the girl you're looking for is in that tank. And then the way she describes it, she calls her mom and says, be careful because you're about to get hit with a bunch of press. And within about, an hour, they said the news, the cops, there are 100 people on the roof. And it was Lisa Lam in one of the tanks. And that's kind of, to be honest, where the story gets even weirder, because that's where a lot of the conspiracies start kind of coming out of the woodwork.
She disappeared on February the 15th, and they found her, the maintenance guy went upstairs and found her body in the water tank on February the 19th. So it's like five days.
Okay, so it's February 19th, not the 19th day then, excuse me.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 4 days later. I mean, I say 4 days, they don't actually know if she was, they don't actually know if she was in there that entire time though. Because depending on,
it was a maintenance
issue.
It was the maintenance issue. Like if the tenants or the hotel guests didn't complain about the maintenance issue, they wouldn't have known. You know what I'm saying? Just like the water was coming out discolored, people were drinking it, bathing in it. And this is like her juice or whatever is like mixed up, like decomposing body mixed up with the water. And people were like ingesting this and like bathing in it. You know what I'm saying? So it's crazy. It's gruesome. It's sincerely gruesome and grisly. But then again, looking at the history, like you and I have done, Mo, in a very like kind of shortened manner, I guess, of this hotel. Like this is nothing new to this hotel in terms of like gruesome activities, suicide, death. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I just wanted to add that.
No, you're absolutely right, because we touched on Richard Ramirez. He was there in the mid-80s. He seemed like he was there for a while, and after murders, during murders, who knows what. They had copycat killers after him. I forget the guy's name.
I wrote down some notes here. Like when, like I said, this Ghost Adventures, Discovery Plus, Zach Baggins and another gentleman went to investigate the hotel, which I think was it was during the pandemic. So it was recent. It was within the last year that they had picked up voices. They had picked up energies. They had, like I said, with special cameras, they had picked up presences of other people being in the hotel. I think they even said that they picked up a hello. They have like a special radio device that picks up different frequencies, and they recorded, like we can't hear it, but like on their device, they could hear somebody saying hello back to them amongst many things. Yeah. And like one of the guy who was being interviewed, like I said, he's one of the hosts of the show. He's not Zach Baggins, but one of the hosts of the show. He was in the basement for a 10-hour period. And then when he was leaving, he heard footsteps behind him. You know what I'm saying? Like something running after him. And he started to run. You know what I'm saying? So, and this is a person who has had multiple paranormal experiences. So, like I said, I think now, Mo, what I'm going to ask you is what do you think, like with all the information that we got, and we didn't, admittedly, we didn't finish the whole documentary. We saw a good like 75% of it. In terms of the four episodes, like in your opinion, what do you think happened to this young lady? Her death was ruled as accidental. Accidental to what? Who knows? But
what do you think? There's a couple things. One, I mean, obviously we haven't seen these tanks, but just from looking at just the water tank alone.
Yeah, your gut instinct.
Getting to the water tank. I mean, you're talking about, I think it was a 15-story hotel. 14 stories have an outside staircase. The last story, which is what, 10, 15 feet, 20 feet, I'm guessing, it's a ladder against the wall, and you're, I don't know how many hundreds of feet in the air. And unless you're Spider-Man or you've got, you know, nerves or steel, there's no way I would even touch that ladder. Okay, let's just say she goes through that ladder. She gets to the roof now. So through a window, 14 steps, up another ladder. She gets to the tank. That's another 10 feet, another ladder that's 10 feet tall. Now you have to open a tank that has this heavy, I don't even know how heavy that lid is.
I said it was about 20 pounds.
Okay, so it's 20 pounds. You got to remember, you're at the top of a 10-foot ladder here, which is the top of a 15-foot building. And who knows if there's other people there? Who knows what else is going on? Who knows if it's at night, you can see anything?
Piggybacking on your point about other people being up there, Mo, like when the... Even so, the cops went up there and everything, but after, like years after, these web sleuths, these YouTubers, they would go and visit the hotel and just like kind of like, this is where Lisa Lam was. And this is like years after, 2-3 years after her death. And when they would go up there, they said they found garbage up there, like pizza boxes and graffiti. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't an abnormal thing that people were probably going up there to chill, to smoke, or to do whatever.
And we're talking about Skid Row here. So there's homelessness there. This may be a place where certain people just say, you know, this is where I'm going to be for the night or whatever. So Okay, let's just say she's hell-bent on getting into this tank. Physically, to do that, I think, is unlikely. For a couple reasons. One, she was admittedly bipolar, and she was on some kind of medication. She describes herself in her blogs as having weeks where she's in bed, like tired, she's fatigued. So I can understand having thoughts of this, that, and the other, but physically being able to do this, that's the thing that throws me off. She has to lift that, like you said, a 20-pound lid, not just lift it, you have to get in. She was naked. She had, how's it going? Hey, sugar, honey, iced tea. I love that font, by the way. That's awesome.
Don't start sugar, honey.
Yes. How's it going? It doesn't add up to me. Getting up there, getting your clothes off, because they said they found all of her clothes at the bottom of this 10-foot tank. And to be able to close it, because they said they found the lid closed. Because let's just say if there's other people around that are not involved, they're like, oh, no. Usually if you see gawkers or people that are like, you know, oh, what's going on? They're not going to hide a situation that they would be the opposite. Be like, hey, what's going on? You know, even the worst, let's say the worst kind of person in the world that just want to take pictures or something. They wouldn't do that. They would do something to bring attention. They wouldn't do the opposite. I would.
Getting on your point, like, okay, so the worst thing, let's say somebody would do up there is like, okay, they see this little Asian girl like climbing up like the fire escape ladder, right? And that alone, like if you're small and you don't have much muscle, like that's very tiring.
The pictures we saw, she looked, and she looked small.
Exactly.
Not very big, like a burly person at all.
No, not a muscular person. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay, so let's say she climbs all the way up, and let's say worst case scenario, there's some dudes up there and they sexually assault her. They take off her clothes. They throw her in the tank. You know what I'm saying? When the autopsy was done, they didn't find any kind of sexual abuse. I mean, the body was decomposed to some extent, but they didn't find any kind of like sexual assault. They didn't find any kind of a rape situation. So I just wanted to add that, you know, to what you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're trying to get at is whatever happened, and it's a horrible, horrible situation. She got assistance in some way, whether she wanted the assistance or not, whether it was nefarious, I mean, whatever the situation was, there was somebody or probably multiple people involved. And I would say it's most likely someone that was privy to the being able to know how to open that tank, where to go. There were hotel video cameras. I know they said they weren't on every floor. There, someone that would know possibly where to go, where not to go, how to do these things, how not to do, like that kind of. So I personally, even though I don't know all the details, think there was someone else involved, at least one person, and at least one of those people was probably either an employee or a former employee of that hotel. Or someone that knows that hotel, maybe not even an employee, someone who maybe lives there or frequents it, someone who knows that roof.
It's wild. Looking at the third episode of the Netflix documentary series, they talked about all these different conspiracy theories. Like they talked about how this whole situation with Elisa Lam plays out similar to the movie Dark Water, which I heard of, I've never seen. That's one conspiracy theory. Another one is that she graduated from some school that specializes in tuberculosis. And at the time of her death, in that time, there was a big tuberculosis breakout in Skid Row. And maybe she had something to do with that. And it's like part of the government, like a cover-up thing. And that the LAPD, I'm like, I don't know. I was just like, I don't
That's
know.
A long
like,
way to go.
Exactly.
To do that. Yeah.
Honestly, I know what I believe is completely implausible and it's hard to prove. I just think that there was something supernatural, that like some kind of a dark energy that was feeding on her. Because I guess from my limited knowledge, Mo, like if you're depressed, if you're low energy, like you tend to attract, hey, what's up, flipping sports guy?
Hey, Paul, how's it going? That's Paul too.
Paul's in the building, you know what I mean? I think if you're low energy, if you're depressed, if you're sad, if you're down, I think you attract more negative energy to you.
Definitely.
You know what I'm saying? Like you want also like a reinforcement of like, I'm down, negative energy. You know, my energy is low. I think that she attracted something in a paranormal sense that kind of led her to this. Like, you're depressed, you're sad, you want to commit suicide, and let me show you how to do that, and you're going to be free. Like, this is me. This is a combination of me seeing a lot of movies and listening to a lot of paranormal podcasts and things like that. But I really believe she was in a place of such negative energy, and that negative energy, like, in some paranormal sense, led her to her death. I really believe that, you know, because there'd be no signs of like of an assault. There'd be no signs of like, or why weren't there fingerprints on the lid? Like, you can't tell me they can't.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? That's like, true. Aren't there fingerprints in that whole area on the stairs, on the ladder? Like, and you came up with nothing. So, and there's another conspiracy, like I said, about the LAPD covering this up. Like, for what? Like, to some unassuming little Asian girl from Vancouver. So
I don't buy the LAPD covering, because I don't, you always have to look for a motive, right? That's the first thing they look at, motive. What's the reason someone would want to do something like this? And to be honest, even your theory there plays into what I was saying, I think, a little bit. She had help of some kind. I don't think she did this on her own. Like, and to add to your point, I would say the elevator scene would back up your point, because they talk about, they mention, oh, this looks like there might be a foot there or something, but they definitely, I mean, you don't have to talk about it. You see her sticking her head out. She looks, she walks out, she comes back in, sticks her head out. And it's for a while, 2 minutes, I believe they said.
And her hands, the elevator doesn't close. Her hands are like in this really odd looking, like contorted to me. I mean, it could look normal, like in the camera, like in this particular, like short video. So it's just very strange, all of it. You know what I'm saying?
There's got to be something. I mean, they did mention, some people, obviously, they say, yo, well, Skid Row, you're talking about, like, it's basically like an open air, you know, a very easy place to get whatever drug you want, possibly. So a 21-year-old looking to experience life, they said, you know, it's not out of the ordinary for her to either get something to drink or whatever. And then another thing they mention is there, I don't, he mentioned in the, not the documentary, but the podcast, there's some kind of a Korean, he says a Korean elevator game. They said she didn't do that, but you press the buttons in a certain way and it makes
That's totally wild. It's kind of like, in the podcast they mentioned, which even the pod, like even the guest who was being interviewed by Chris Jericho, he even like, was like, he denied it, but that there's a something where like, if you press the elevator buttons in a particular order, it like opens up a portal on a different floor, like to a different kind of dimension. You know what I mean?
I think even the guy
being interviewed was like, yeah, I don't think that was that. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah,
I mean,
to be honest, to that point, sorry to cut you off.
No, it's okay.
I think that what maybe happened with that one Korean elevator is that they found some kind of fault by pressing the buttons in a certain way that froze the elevator. And I think that's what happened to that one elevator, and it went from there. That's my opinion.
Yeah, it's wild. Hey, what's up, Blood, Sweat, and Spell?
Hey, how's it going, Leroy?
You know what I have seen working in New York City hotels? I know I keep going back to this, but like I said, we're talking about a hotel, and I've had a lot of different hotel experiences. Oh, yeah. And also, partying in New York City, coming home late at night to the Port Authority area to go ahead and get on a bus to come home to New Jersey. And I've seen this a lot. Like, a lot of times if there's drunk, because this is making me think of the Elisa Lam situation. Like, if there's situations when, like, somebody will be super drunk, and, like, that's a big homeless community in that area as well.
Yeah.
The Port Authority, because there's a homeless shelter there, and they get robbed. You know, like, maybe, like, somebody's with them, and they'll, like, be talking to them and, like, BSing them, and then they'll take whatever is on them because they're so drunk they can't do nothing about it. And could that have been a situation with Elisa Lam? But then there's no proof. Like, I mean, there's nothing, you know, like, could she have come in with somebody from Skid Row that she befriended, but then they try to rob her or rape her or like do something. But like I said, after the autopsy, it didn't say anything about sexual assault. Could that have been, could that have been washed away with a decomposition? I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Or like a sense of struggle, or like something in the fingernails. Like, this is just like CSI TV brain. Like, is there something in the fingernails, like something of a struggle or like a bruises or something? You know what I'm saying?
I'm wondering, to be honest. I mean, we've all been to, like, if you go to any city at late at night, and if it's like one or two people, and you see people like that, they prey on, they look for people that are drunk, they look for girls, they look for anyone that may be an easy target. I'm wondering if she had maybe narrowly escaped something, or she had seen something during the day. That's maybe why she was kind of like on edge. maybe she did meet some, maybe she did take some, maybe she earlier in the day, and that's why she was kind of doing whatever she was trying to get away. So yeah, I mean, I guess unfortunately we'll never know, but I mean,
I will ask you something that I answered earlier. Yes. Well, would you stay at this hotel or would you? Dude, yeah, 100%. They're going to open it up back in October, like I said, of 2021.
Yes.
And they're going to open it up for business. And the thing is, like, what's happened with this hotel and all that's happened around it, like, it has like a cult following a little bit. You know what I'm saying? And like I said, I think this is a portal of dark energy, this place. But like, if you look on Wikipedia, it's like there's been videos that have filmed there, like Blink 182 did a video there, U2 did a video, like we just discussed not too long ago, where American Horror Story based the season of its show on this.
And a fabulous season. You should watch that, people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, American Horror Story, 9 times out of 10, great show. You know, some seasons, not so much, but other seasons, fantastic. But, and when this hotel opens up, I think it's going to be a place for people that they still want to visit it. They still want to, like, know, where is it that Richard Ramirez stayed? Where is it that Lisa Lam stayed? And, like, where did there was a writer called Pigeon Goldie that was murdered in the hotel. Like, let me go to where her room is. So as long as that hotel exists, and you don't know if it's, like, even, like, they covered this in the podcast, so it's, like, possibly a poltergeist situation. Like, what was there on that ground before that hotel was built, you know? Like,
I think, and it's funny because we always go back to reselling, because you talk about like a Tony Robbins or anything like that, he always talked, like you said, he talks about the opposite. Like, you want to surround yourself with bright energy, like people that are positive. You know, if you want to do X, Y, and Z, so find someone who's doing X, Y, and Z. So the opposite is true too, like you said. If you see someone that is wallowing in depression and they're not doing so well, they're doing this, that, and the other, they're going to surround themselves without maybe even knowing it with other people like that.
Attraction. So,
exactly. Like attraction. The opposite of the law of attraction. I guess it's still the law of attraction, just the negative part of that, right?
Exactly. So, no, well said. Well said, Mo. Well said. Absolutely. You are what you consume. I've said that many, many times. Like, you are what you watch. You are what you listen to. You are what you eat. We know that.
Yes.
And, you know, putting that energy out is kind of what you get back. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So what I just wanted to finish the last point was like that when this place opens up again, it's going to be like an Area 51. It's going to be like one of these places that people want to come and visit and stay, even if they rename it or they go by a different name, which they tried to do.
Yeah.
The owners of the hotel where they renamed it, did a different lobby and stuff, which is smart. You know what I'm saying? Cause the dark history of this hotel, which is a smart decision. I'm not against that decision. But this will, as long as that hotel stands, is going to continue to be a hot spot, a cult hot spot where people are going to want to come and visit it and find out what's going on here. And I'm sure that this is not going to be the first time someone who is into the paranormal themselves. Like I said, the paranormal is the angle that really has attracted me here, that someone who is studying the paranormal is going to go to this hotel and kind of study it again. Maybe when equipment gets even better, that they can pick up on different energies and stuff like that. Going back to your point, Mo, just wrapping up my thing here, we are energy. You know what I'm saying? Like, we are the energy that we attract, and we are, like, we define ourselves kind of like by this energy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And yeah, like you said, Mo, like, you're going to be down, you might attract down energy. Or like, let's say we all smoke weed and we're going to attract other weed smokers, right?
Exactly.
Look at the people who are commenting. You do a channel about reselling, and the people who are watching us now are resellers.
Exactly.
Commented. So, you know, we are the energy that we put out. You know what I'm saying? But I just wanted to wrap that up.
So. No, absolutely. And then if you guys want to find out more about this, like we said, it's a Netflix documentary. I believe it's called The Cecil Hotel or Hotel Cecil.
Yeah. And actually, if you really want to kind of like dig into it, get a full blast of it, The Cecil Hotel documentary. I didn't see it yet, but there's a Night Stalker Richard Ramirez documentary. This is all on Netflix. If you want to do like a pop version of this, like I said, there's American Horror Story season, the hotel season, which is on Netflix. I think it's still on Netflix as well. So you could just really engross yourself. That's a lot of dark energy. But I mean, if you like horror and stuff like that, and maybe you want to like parse it out. But yeah, you can really like dig into this whole.
It's very heavy stuff. But it is. If you like it, you will really like this, I would say. Because there's a lot of stuff on my hand, but it's worth a check, worth checking out if you are into that. So, and then the other thing was Chris Carroll's Talk is Jericho podcast about, I'm blanking on the exact, oh, wait, I got it right here. Terrifying Tales in the Cecil Hotel.
Fantastic. I'm telling you, honestly, out of all the content that I asked us to consume for this, Mo, like that was the one that really like, really like spoke to me the most. You know what I'm saying?
And actually, like I said before, when we talked about Chris Jericho, I was happily surprised the way he's open-minded about whatever he talks about. And he kind of just goes with the guest. He kind of, he jabs him a little bit, but he doesn't kind of laugh him off the stage. So check that out if you want to. Now we're reaching the hour mark. So I just, before we go, I want to have Paul let us know where we can find you and any good stuff that's coming along.
Well, Mo, as always, I wanted to give you a shout out because you entertain me and all these crazy notions, like, you know, so thank you so much. And thank you just for you having an open mind and wanting to discuss this because you haven't shot me down yet. And I'm okay for you to shoot me down on a topic that I might bring up, definitely. But my name is Paul V. Perez. The name of the podcast is the Improve and Have Fun Podcast. The most recent episode has me discussing weird stories. If you like the story, I have more weird stories on my podcast. Also, my eBay results for the last year. You know, for the fellow resellers, and I do a mixtape as well. Some of my favorite songs in the moment. And I'm going to be publishing the discussion that Mo and I had regarding UFOs in an upcoming recent episode. The next episode will probably be that. But Mo, once again, thank you. Oh, I love that one. Yeah, we've done some really good ones, definitely. And Mo, once again, thank you for having me on your show, for sure.
Absolutely. And you guys know where we are, right, or where I am right now, I should say right now, because this is my YouTube channel, Reseller Niche Podcast. And if you want to check me out on Facebook, I have a little group called the Reseller Niche Help Group. But until the next one, thank you, Paul. Thank you for anyone that's listening to this in the future or right now. Have a good one. Bye.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Reseller Niche Podcast. Show notes and social media links are located at resellerniche.com. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.